C1C. Number 10A.
We are discussing a first paragraph in Life, and we just left it with that terrific sentence which explains so much about the relationship between idea and thought, because this has always been a matter of confusion for many students of Christian Science. Why? Because we know that mortal thoughts, just as it starts out here, this paragraph, that mortal thoughts are actually producing within our system all the discords that we can think of. And so there is a feeling, yes, therefore I have to lift up mortal thought to spiritual thoughts. And so the student tries to have an improved sense of thinking by thinking spiritually. But what does that mean, thinking spiritually? Usually it's just an improved human concept of thinking, whereas only those thoughts that come from idea are really true thoughts or spiritual thoughts, divine concepts. And it is interesting to see that Mrs. Eddy uses, as far as I just remember, in those 16 chapters, only once that combination of spiritual thought. And I think once more in the glossary, you can see that here she explains what is the true character of spiritual thoughts. The true character of spiritual thoughts is not to think spiritually. The true character of thought is to go out from ideas, the ideas of mind. And these are transmitted, as she says here, through divine signs and through that divine mind to the point where it corrects within our thinking what is wrong, and brings forth, therefore, that which is true, and that defines divine thoughts, spiritual thoughts, divine concepts. And they, therefore, backed up by the true idea of mind, and they produce harmonious results. It isn't that our spiritual thoughts that we try to arrive at through better thinking does anything. It is always that first we must go out from mind, and see that mind has an infinite idea, and that mind knows ideas. And only as we go out from mind and let our mortal thoughts be corrected by the divine mind and its ideas, only then really wrong thoughts are excluded, and only then we are aware of spiritual things, that spiritual thought, and only then they produce harmonious results. So it isn't thoughts that produce harmonious results, it's the ideas that form spiritual thoughts that produce harmonious results. And so we must see that we are not trying to demonstrate something through spiritual thinking. We must demonstrate something by going out from mind and mind's ideas, and in the consciousness of mind and mind's ideas, naturally our thoughts are transformed to the point where thought loses everything that is wrong, and so the ideas establish in consciousness the true thoughts, the spiritual thoughts, and therefore these ideas through spiritual thoughts produce harmonious results. And so we find here a terrific sense of the fatherhood of man, of the idea, you see, that it shows what produces harmonious results. Mind's ideas correcting within our thought that which is wrong, and that produces harmonious results. And in this way, we lend ourselves to be the reflection of that one life, and be the father of our universe, and that within us reflect only ideas that bring about, that's the father, that brings about, that creates harmonious results. So that we can see that the divine mind, that's okay, the divine mind has a creation of ideas, that's okay, so what for us? At that point in life we say, so what? Oh yes, I tell you, so what? You let that divine mind transform your thinking to that point where you only entertain spiritual thoughts, and then they produce for you a harmonious existence. And so we create our own harmonious universe in the human. You see? In the divine, it's the divine mind that creates the harmonious universe. But we are not participating in it until at the point of life we are letting ourselves be used by reflection to father the universe and say, all right, I must take an active part in it. I must take a very active part in it. Namely, that active part which is described here as immortal models. That's a side note. Immortal models. We must therefore have in our consciousness that immortal model of mind's infinite ideas. That's our model of thought. She goes on, and we wonder how she goes on in that vein, and says, deducing one's conclusion as to man from imperfection instead of perfection, one cannot no more arrive at the true conception or understanding of man and make himself like it than a sculptor can perfect his outlines from an imperfect model, or the painter can depict the form and face of Jesus while doing what? While holding in thought the character of Judas. What is the piss about that whole paragraph? You can pin it down, those seven lines, just to one thing. If you hold a perfect model in thought, you can also experience a perfect expression. And all what she says are various symbols, various examples to illustrate that. Again, she repeats, so to say, in a nutshell, what she has been trying to show in the first paragraph on life, and now says, you see, the whole thing is just a matter of consciousness, a question, what is your ideal? What is your model? Where does your gaze rest? That's the question. What kind of a father are you? So that's the first great point. In order to create our own perfect universe, you see, she would say, you have to have a perfect model in front of you. And where do we get that perfect model? We get that, now again comes interpretation and relationship. Where do we get that perfect model? The perfect model we get in the big chapter on mind, or passage on mind, and spirit, and soul, and principle. There is the perfect model stated, the divine model stated. Can you see that this fifth subject could never be at the beginning of the chapter? Never. Because if she would demand that we have a perfect model, we will say, well, you first have to tell us what the perfect model is, wouldn't you? See? You begin to see now order. Did you see now what interpretation is? It's only a matter of relationship, of showing at which point idea appears, in which relationship it stands, or else it doesn't make sense. All right, we go on further. And just listen if we get the same sense of fatherhood again. The conceptions of mortal, erring thought, well, this sounds again familiar, like we had before in the first paragraph online. It was again a mortal, erring thought. And suddenly I feel there's something new coming in. Must give way to the ideal of all that is perfect and eternal. You see, if I have a tonality sense, then I at once detect here something, namely, that she is not only speaking about shall we have a perfect model or shall we have an imperfect model, what happens if we have an imperfect model, what happens when we have a perfect model. Now, she brings in something completely different, namely, a Christ touch, the Christ that says, now the Christ wants you to exchange the wrong model for the right model. You see? That's a Christ office that comes and retranslates and says, you have to change that. And here she says, it must give way to the ideal of all that is perfect and eternal. Through many generations, human beliefs will be attaining diviner conceptions, and the immortal and perfect model of God's creation will finally be seen as the only true conception of being. And again, you ask yourself, what does she really say? She wants to say that as time goes on, through many generations, as time goes on, really, the false model will give way to the true model. What is it that has the power that the false is giving way to the true? That's what category? That's the Christ category. Huh? The Christ is always that which says, no matter what you do, I'm working on you. I'm jolly well working on you. If you don't give in right away, I still work on you. And slowly and step by step, you have to give way. I'm the Christ and nothing can oppose me. So, she says, through many generations, human beliefs will be attaining divine conception. Can you see she takes in a time sense, a developing sense? It says, it may take generations, but it will happen. So you get the terrific sense of the Christ that first says the false model must give way for the true model. That's a statement. Then afterwards saying, and it has to give way now willy-nilly. It has to give way willy-nilly. You can't help it. She goes on and says, science reveals the possibility of achieving all good. Again, I get that sense. Oh yes, there is a rule there that is operating. You can't help it. There is a way how this is being achieved. Still a sense of how to achieve it. And sets mortals at work to discover what God has already done. Can you see? It sets mortals at work. She's not speaking about man as the idea of God. She speaks about mortals. Says, this idea, you know, this high ideal is a factuality in being, and therefore it cannot be sidestepped. It will precipitate itself on humanity, and humanity will have to give in and will have to search for the true ideal and will, after a while, discover what God has already done. But distrust of one's ability to gain the goodness desired and to bring out better and higher results often hampers the trial of one's wings and ensures failure at the outset. So she brings even in, you see now, the animal magnetism concept of resisting the Christ translation and says that which really hinders the experience of this advancing idea is your distrust in your own ability. So she appeals to the fatherhood sense within you and say, don't distrust that you can be a father to the universe, that you can establish a new universe. Just trust that you can do it, because it's anyway the workings of the idea, not your working. Therefore she goes on and says, mortals must change their ideals. Can you hear the same tone again? Mortals must change their ideals. Just as she had on line 7, 8, that she said, well, the wrong ideal must give way to the right ideal. So you have still that same tone in it, that the Christ wants us to change the wrong to the right. Mortals must change their ideals in order to improve their models. A sick body is evolved from sick thoughts. That's only an illustration, huh? It's an illustration of what she has been showing all from the beginning of the Tone of Life. If you remember that, really that key term where it says that mortal thought transmits its own images and forms its offspring after human illusions. You remember that sentence right at the beginning of life? Huh? We said, let's keep that in mind, that's a key tone here. She gives an illustration of it and says, yes, so if your mortal thought is sickly thoughts, then it evolves a sick body. Sickness, disease and death proceed from fear. Another example. If in your consciousness you have fear, that produces sickness, disease and death. Sensualism evolves bad physical and moral conditions. That's another example. It's not something new. It's just exemplifying constantly the wrong sense of fatherhood and then afterwards the right sense of fatherhood. The wrong sense of fatherhood, which just says that which you entertain in consciousness is determining what you experience. If you entertain in your consciousness sick thoughts, your body experiences disease. If you entertain in your thoughts fearful thoughts, you experience sin, sickness and death. If you entertain in your thoughts sensualism, then the effect of it will be physical and moral bad conditions. You see, there are only examples. So, again, we can distill, so to say, always a paragraph in just one fundamental concept, namely, if we have a bad ideal, we have a bad experience, but the point was in this paragraph that mortals must change that ideal. So we go on and see that she asked for that. Selfishness and sensuality are educated in mortal mind by the thought ever recurring to one's self. You see again the same law again, that if thought, mortal thoughts, is wrong, therefore recurring about one's own self, that produces selfishness, sensualism. If in our thought we constantly have conversation with our body and ask the body, how are you today, old boy? How are you? Are you quite all right? Do you feel tired? Do you feel strong? Do you feel sick? Do you feel this? Which we call, you know, all those conversations which we have with our dear old body, huh? And if we talk too much to him, he will determine our health. So conversation about the body, then, and by the expectation of perpetual pleasure or pain from it, that's another way how we can talk with our body. Say, did you get enough of it today? Were you very pleased today with what you got? Huh? And we can talk with the body quite nicely, and the result is always a false result. And this education is at the expense of spiritual growth. See, that therefore we choke our spiritual growth or development. If we array thought in mortal vestures, again, mortal thought transmits then its own images. What happens if we array thought in mortal vestures? It must lose its immortal nature. That's the effect. Yeah? So, can you see what is meant by the tone of life as the fatherhood of life and the counterfeit of the fatherhood of life? It's that simple rule which we know in Christian Science practice. That's the first thing one usually tells a patient or anybody that says, you know, it is not your body that is sick, that is not the case. Actually, your thinking is sick. And a sick thinking brings about a sick body. Therefore, if you do not want to be sick, what have you to do? You have to change your model. Therefore, it's the demand that we change our ideal, to change our model, and when we ask which model is the right model, then life in the first place has shown the right model is mind and mind's ideas that always transmit through divine science only ideas to us and form true thoughts, and there you get your true model. Yeah. So, we go on and come to the next paragraph, still asking ourselves now, is she still going to say that you should change your model, or is she going to introduce something new? See, that's always the attitude when you read the book. Always you have gained a certain insight, and then you are always saying, is she repeating that in another way, or is she breaking the subject and starts out something new? So, she goes on and says, if we look to the body for pleasure, we find pain. And I think, oh yes, that's still the same. Entertaining mortal thought, the effect of it is pain. Still the same. If we look for life in body, we find death. If we look for truth in body, we find error. If we look for spirit in body, we find its opposite, matter, and it seems that she's still giving more examples of the same thing, that what we entertain is therefore that which produces the result. But then now she comes to another point and says, now reverse this action. Now comes at once the point, reverse it. I said, yes. Didn't she already say that we should have a perfect model instead of an imperfect model? Yes, that she also said before already, that we should change our model. But she never said how. How to do it. You see? She never said, what should you do in order to change your model? But now she says it. She says, look away from the body into truth and love. You see, Now suddenly we get the rules of Christianity that says, how do you practice it? What are you doing practically about it? How can you change your models? And you can do it by looking away from the body that only gives you a lot of trouble and turn towards truth and love, the principle of all happiness, harmony, and immortality. So here we get the first introduction into the practical sense of Christianity.